fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Welcome back to the DFL Swimming Podcast. I'm glad to say today, Dez and I, we're 3 days removed from the previous episode. We're back on it, really dialed in for this time of the season. And so we're excited to get into this one, which will be the NCAA Conference Preview and Prediction episode. Dez, how are you doing? He's repping the USA Curling shirt today, everyone not watching the video. Dez, you want to walk us through that a little bit?
Go watch curling. U.S. has been doing killing it right now in the Olympics in curling. Best they've done in years. For those that don't know, my mom was an Olympic curler. So always got to rep the brand and go watch curling. Go support Olympic sports.
Super sport. I have to attest to that. The Sachsens got us out curling a couple times back in college, and it was a good time. It's a good time. But let's get back to what this is actually about today, which is conference season. And as we alluded to in the previous episode, with the new NCAA qualifying format, we already have athletes qualified for NCs this year out of the Big West Conference held their meet this previous week. And so with the new qualification procedure, if you won your event and we're under the new qualifying standard, you're into the meet. So we got 9 athletes coming out of the Big West already punching a ticket to the NCAAs. So I think it's only right that we start there, Dez, with people already putting their name in history and qualifying for NCs this year. So what's the situation?
We have 9 athletes qualified, 5 on the women's side, 4 on the men's side. The team that has represented the most is Hawaii has 3 swimmers. UC San Diego has 3 swimmers as well. But basically, yeah, we've got 9 guys, that 9 people that were under the cut. It's just interesting because there haven't been really many conference meets yet. We already have 9 qualifiers. I'll be interested to see how many total qualifiers there are over this next month, because there are a lot of conference meets that still have to happen. And a lot of swimmers that I'm guessing are going to be under the cut, and probably more than the NCAA thought when they made this ruling. I don't know. What do you think about this?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. To me, this seems about right with how many people I would see making the meet. And we had obviously concerns, or I think that we talked about last week, about people qualifying for the meet being way off last year's previous cut time to make NCs. And I think we get a little bit of a mixed bag. I think some of that is valid still, and some of it's not as bad as we thought. But I mean, in this conference, you have someone like Carl Ostrowski, who's in his 17th year of college this year down in Hawaii. 19-1 to win the 50 free. Last year's cut time was only 19-0. So I look at that and I'm saying, you know, maybe he might not have even full rested for this meet, knowing that he's probably going to walk through, win, he can go what the standard is, win the event, punch his ticket to NCs, and then full taper for that meet. I don't know, but that's not that bad. But then I think on the converse, opposite side of that, you see 200 breaststroke, Carter Dooling from Grand Canyon goes 154.5, which I think was just under, I think the cut was like 155.0. But last year's cut line to make NCs was 152.8. So you're looking at almost, you know, like basically 2 seconds off what the slowest athlete made it to NCs with last year. So I think that's maybe where you got a little bit of an issue. What do you think about that?
You gotta remember too that last year was the last year of the 5th years for COVID. So the invite time could have been faster than what it possibly would have been this year. I don't know. I guess, you know, we won't really find that out. But there also was one girl who was actually under the cut line from last year. Chloe Braun was 58.95 on the 100 breaststroke, and the invite time last year was 59.51. She was the only one out of all nine that was actually under the cut from previous years.
The one thing, yeah, I mean, and that's fair. And I think in previous year, I mean, you wouldn't know at this point, and it's would be hard to say, but let's say she would have been the only athlete from this conference to make NCs in 2026. Now you have nine people from that conference going. And I also think a little bit for just the, you know, production piece of the meet, I saw some images out of this meet where you have guys standing up on the podium with the ticket punch sign to NCAAs, which I honestly thought was pretty cool. It's pretty cool, I think, at least for some of these smaller conferences, when you know straight away, like, really adds a lot of excitement. Part of in previous years, there's such a big lag time from when you swim to when you actually find out if you're going to go to the meet. In a way, when you know right away, you're like, I'm in, it adds a little bit more excitement that you can play off of a little bit more at the actual meet. So yeah, that's not something I had initially thought about, but I thought was pretty cool that they did at the meet.
Yeah, I mean, she would know if she would have made the meet for like another month, right?
Exactly.
Like,
you mean, yeah. It's, I mean, we've experienced that before with, I mean, you even yourself, and when you were close in the tuner back that one year, you know, you swim, you might be happy in the moment, but then immediately after a couple of minutes, you think about it, you're like, oh wait, that's probably going to be right about there for making the meet this year. And then, not that it pulls the excitement away from it, but then it's like, when, you know, in the age where we have, you know, last chance meets, potential time trials, still at conference, it immediately is like, oh, I need to go faster already. Like, some of the just instant, like, boom, you're in type of thing is, I think, a little bit cool, at least for some of these smaller meets that maybe don't have basically any qualifiers historically. So
I would agree. I would agree with that.
But it's interesting that we already, you know, we're seeing this play out now in actually after this first week, and it's going to be interesting to keep tabs on as we move forward. But I do think, with that we should backtrack a little bit back to the big conference meets that we got this week. Des, so do you want to run through what are the three big meets that we got this week?
Yeah, the three big ones we're going to be talking about are going to be ACC's men's and women's, SEC's men's and women's, and then women's Big Tens. Those are the big three that we're going to cover today. Talk about events. We'll talk about some storylines going on throughout the meet. And then we'll also have our own placement predictions that we gave, maybe with some hot takes in there as well.
Yeah, so starting off, we got ACC's, which is hosted this year in Tennessee, I believe.
Knoxville. It's in Atlanta.
It's in Atlanta,
ACC's,
folks.
Yes, okay. Atlanta. It's at Georgia Tech.
Atlanta, okay. Georgia Tech this year, which is a great facility, NCAA caliber pool. So in this day and age, with 15 teams on each side, ACC's, that's basically what you need. But I think, Des and I talking off air, I think this might be, at least for storylines and the way this meet could actually shake out in terms of team placement, is probably the most intrigue of this whole week and of the Power Four conference season. What are we looking at on the men's side to start with?
Men's side, I mean, there's a really, really, really big race for first. And then after those, the first place, there's going to be a big race for kind of 4 through 8 as well. So in the race for first, you pretty much have Cal, you have NC State, and you have Stanford on the men's side. And it's kind of a toss-up right now when you look at it, which is going to make a really interesting storyline moving forward. And then on the women's side, it's kind of a race for second. Virginia's probably going to run away with first place, or sorry, third. Virginia's going to run away with first place. Stanford's probably going to get second, but that third place is...
You're listening to a podcast right now, driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own podcast is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads just like this. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start your new podcast for free today at RSS.com.
It's really open. You have a really hot Louisville Cardinal team. You have NC State and you have Cal. really, really intriguing. What do you think about those storylines?
Yeah, I mean, I think for one thing, like we said on the men's side, we even in covering, you know, some of these last dual meets that we had for this season, we already talked about this Cal Stanford situation thing that's going on. I mean, Cal just got blown out by Stanford in their previous duel of the meet. It's really just interesting to me where these teams are kind of going to, what place they're going to be in coming into this meet. Are they really going to stick to their guns? I think Cal benefited in previous years from being able to kind of ride through, but now that night ride through conference into NCAAs, but now that they're in such a competitive conference, I think, you know, getting that conference title is a big one. So it's really going to come down to the depth and taking advantage of some of those last few guys on your roster, sneaking into an A final, sneaking into a B final, that sort of thing. So race wise, I think there's also going to be some big hitters in there. So I think we should cover that a little bit. Maybe should we just run through some of the men's races that we picked out first, and then cover the women's?
Yeah, definitely. The men's races, one that I picked out was the 500 free. Right now, it's looking really interesting. It's almost looking like the Battle of the Freshmen, right? You have Ethan Eck, who has been absolutely on fire this year, right? Ethan has looked really, really good. And then Max Carlson. All three of those boys are freshmen. They're your top three times right now in the ACC. They're the only three dudes that have been under 415. Sitting at 411 for Ethan Eck, 411 for Max Carlson, and 412 for Ryan Ehrsman. So that's a really intriguing race that's gonna set up the next 4 years of the 500 free for the ACC.
No, yeah, for sure. And I mean, I think it's something also to say, with three freshmen at the top, you really don't know with these guys coming into to their first conference meet how they'll handle the pressure, just the overall meet. One thing that we didn't touch on, but ACC's is actually sticking to the previous year's event order that we saw around at NC's other conference meets. So that typical first day will be the 500 free, 200 IM, and 50 free. So for some of these guys, if they're not on that 800 free relay on Wednesday night, this will be the first time we see them in the pool for those, you know, final swims. And so who knows what you're going to get. And I'm looking further down this ranking list in ACC's. You got, you know, a lot of experience. You got Lance Norris ranked fifth right now. You got Eduardo Moraes, who hasn't swam much this season. Henry McFadden, who could be primed for a big drop. I just think it'll be interesting to see as you see some of these maybe more experienced guys who's kind of just, you know, it's a little bit more experience coming through the season. How is it going to shake out for these freshmen who are trying to defend basically the top three? So that's going to be a good one, to be honest. I'm looking for a more, you know, Henry McFadden, Lance Norris win personally. Where do you see it fall?
I don't know. Ethan Eck has just been on one this year. Like you said, it's hard for a freshman to perform in a meet that they've never swam at before. But these three boys specifically have done meets of this caliber, of this level before. And I actually think that Ethan Eck's going to come out with the win on this one.
I mean, he's been dominant this year. He's been really consistent, which I think was probably the biggest thing that you're looking for coming into this time of year. And I think that holds a lot of confidence for kids. But we'll see if we can hold up to the the pressure. Men's 200 breaststroke. I think this is going to be another one that will be extremely interesting. We see Ben Delmer, who has kind of really seen a huge rise this year, trying to defend against a few guys, but namely Yamoto Okudome from Cal, who has already proven himself in previous years. Where do you see this right now?
Yeah, I don't know. Like you said, Ben Delmar has been kind of on a tear this year. He's the only one that's been under 150 in the 200 breaststroke so far. Now, Yamoto Okudome has been under 150, I believe he was last year, and he's right on the cusp. He's 150.00. But also, don't count out someone like Daniel Lee, who has been having a really outstanding year. Stanford has been on one, and he went 150 point against Cal earlier a couple weeks ago. So don't count him out as well. I think the race will come down to those three. I have Okudome coming out on top. But it's really hard to count out Del Mar, who, again, has just had a year that has been noteworthy. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I honestly, and this is a hot take, I must admit, but I almost like Daniel Lee to come out on top with this one. I think Yamoto is probably not going to put too much pressure on this meet. It's probably just in it more for the racing, kind of just get into championship mode. Ben Delmer, I think, had an amazing midseason meet. I could see him coming off that a little bit and really focusing towards NCs, maybe just not being the prep isn't there yet. And Daniel Lee, I think, is someone who at Stanford has, I think, shown up usually pretty darn well at ACCs and then maybe even come off. They're not quite as dialed for NCs. So I don't see why not. He couldn't, you know, slip in there, get under 150 just a titch. I think that does it just about. I don't know if either Ben or Yamoto will get under that mark. And I think, you know, just being the one guy who gets under 150 in this meet could probably get the win. So
yeah, I think that's what does it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's the key. And you got three guys who are right there to do it, but I think it's just the one that actually gets it done in finals and comes out on top. Men's 100 fly is one of the, I think, the last race that we wanted to touch on here. Who are the big hitters that we're looking at there?
I mean, you got a lot of big names, and this event's kind of open right now. Now, at the top right now, you have Michael Arkangelos. I can never say that.
Arkangelski,
Thomas Heilman, Rafael Gu, Aiden Hayes, and Aiden Musso are kind of your top names here. Now, only one of them has been under 44 before, and that's Thomas Heilman. But the rest of those names have just been absolutely on a tear recently. And, I mean, Arkangelski has had a phenomenal year last year, kind of a breakthrough year. No one really saw it coming. Aiden Hayes is Aiden Hayes, you know, national champion in the 200 fly in previous years. But what are we going to get from him? And then Rafael Gu has just been very consistent. And again, Stanford has been on a tear this year. So what are you seeing coming out of the 100 fly?
Yeah, well, and this has been one of these events that it seems like years past that, you know, I remember as we prepped for Big Tens, I would go and look in the prelims results of the ACC 100 fly and be like, goodness gracious, I'm glad I'm not a 100 flyer in the ACC, because it's been really hard to make it back. I think already pre-conference, 24th comes in at 46.5, which isn't necessarily anything too special, but I mean, the top 17 guys are all under 46, and the top 4 or 5 already under 45. So there's a lot of players and fine margins to look at here. And I mean, even someone like, I mean, possibly couldn't swim the event, we'll see, but Luca Battaglini, even, who is 7th right now, he's had a big year, and I think could be someone who could make a run at a few event wins at this meet. So one, I'm looking at how hard it's going to be to make the A final in this event, probably just about under 45 for sure. And then two, just the dogfight that it's going to be in that actual final.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this, even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at rss.com.
So, I don't know. I like Heilman. Where are you? I'm going to take your boy.
Yeah, I'm also going to say Thomas.
Oh, come on.
Now, I have a little bit of bias, obviously, towards him, but he's the only guy who's been under 44. No one else has been under 44 in this field. So I thought Aiden Hayes was, but he's not been. So I just, you got to go with that. I think that being the most consistent, although he's a freshman, being the only one under 44, it's hard to do that.
Yeah. And I mean, you look at this event, getting to NC's last year, the cut came in at like 45.1, I think. I mean, with the few extra qualifiers you might have from mid-major conference meets this year, I see the actual rank, the cut line for power four swimmers to be probably 44.8, 44.9.
Yeah. I mean, that's just ridiculous. Under 45.
So it's going to be fast and it's going to be tight. So, those are some of the big ones. And thankfully we'll get to see that five free straight out of the gate on Thursday morning, which is going to be a good one. So let's move to the women's side here. Obviously Louisville, NC State, Cal, like we talked about, Stanford, throw them in there as well for some of the top talent for some of these big races. Women's 50 free straight out of the gates on day one. What are some of the names that we're looking at there?
Yeah, I was looking at some of the top times, and this one really seems like the most interesting to me. Now you have three girls who have been 21.2 or faster, and that's Tori Huss, Sarah Curtis, and Julia Dennis. But don't count on Anna Moshe and Claire Kirzan as well, who have both been 21 low before. As of right now, we don't know if Tori Huss is even swimming the 50 freestyle. She's been entering the 200 IM and the 50 free, but I really think that Huss, Curtis, and Dennis, and then you throw in Kirzan as well, those three are going to be the three that you're going to be looking at to possibly win the event. Again, that's if Kirzan even swims it. She could be doing the 100 fly 100 back double as well. But, you know, those three are three very big names who have been on an absolute tear this year. You have Sarah Curtis coming over from Italy, who translated really, really nicely into the short course yards pool. Tori Husk, who has been one of the most dominant swimmers in the U.S. in the past few years. And then Julia Dennis, who has been just on an absolute tear for the Louisville Cardinals recently.
Yeah, no, it'll be a little tough if Tori's not in there for that one. Hopefully, she maybe just takes the 50 free just for, I mean, the racing and the competitiveness of the event. If she sticks with the 2IM, I mean, there'll still be, you got Lucy Bell, Tegan O'Dell in there to push her. Anastasia Gorbenko, who's another big name there. So that there's options there for her, which is good. But I even look at someone like, you didn't mention her name, but Bryn Greenwalt, the transfer to Virginia, who's won a best time of 21.5 at midseason. What could she do at her first D1 conference meet? Is I think an interesting one to watch there too. Could be a big performance that sneaks under the radar. So, women's 100 free, we'll just go up the sprint freestyle chain.
Yeah. Again, looking at the events, like this one seems like it's gonna be a really close one as well. Anna Moshe, Tori Husk. You're probably gonna hear Tori's name a lot. Again, just one of the best swimmers in the U.S. the past couple of years. Had an amazing 2021 Olympic Games. But Anna Moshe has been under 46, and she's the only swimmer that has been under 46 so far this year. And then Tori Husk has seen her best time so far with 46.1. You have Sarah Curtis not super far behind, 46.6, and Julia Dennis with a 46.7. But I think the race will come down to Moshe and Husk and who's going to be most on it.
You know, I think Tori is just so versatile. So you could, I mean, do you think it's for even, is she probably locked in on the 100 free here too, would you say?
I think so. I don't know. Okay. Like,
yeah.
Her 200s a stroke really aren't her strong suit. And, you know, if you look at her on the international level recently, she's been really transitioning into the freestyle.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think if she's in this one, she probably is a good shout for the win. Anna Moshe, I think, I mean, considering this is her bread and butter, I don't necessarily think her to be into this meet with too much prep. Tori obviously does swim the 100 frequently, but I think when you're kind of swimming, like if she does end up doing the 2IM, or I mean, not that they're off events for her, but when you're kind of mixing it up here and there at conference, I think it brings some pressure off and opens the door for some big swims. So I like the Tori Huss shout for the women's 100 free
there. I think it's hard to say, you know, no to Tori winning that event. I'm going to go with Anna Moshe, though. She's been swimming the 100 free, I think, at like every meet. And I just think consistency is key when it comes to an event like this.
Fair enough, Daz. Fair enough. I guess we'll have to follow these up post-meet and see. Just tally up my correct predictions.
Okay.
All right, last event for the women's side, women's 100 breast. This one's really interesting to me because you got Lucy Bell, Anastasia Gorbenko, and Elia Fimova, and Emma Weber from Virginia, being the four swimmers all being bet who have been under 58 this year. So Lucy Bell at 57.6, Anastasia Gorbenko 57.6, and Elia Fimova exact same time as Gorbenko 57.6, and Emma Weber at 57.9. And so you got a tight heat on paper here with a lot of swimmers who have had varying levels of experience, namely Anastasia Gorbenko, with probably only a few official swims in the 100 breast. When I look at this, I think it's going to be tight, but I honestly see Anastasia Gorbenko going 56 this meet and getting the win. I think she's just going to get better and better as she swims more in the short course pool, and the energy will be there here for her at conference.
I agree with that. Now, Lucy Bell has been the most consistent on this list. She won the 200 breaststroke last year, NCAAs, and she was up there for the 100 breaststroke as well. But I agree with you. Lucy Bell's a little bit better at the 200. Gorbenko has been on one, and I agree. I think she's just going to keep getting better and better.
Yeah, so I think there's a lot of even more races than we didn't cover here at ACC's that I think are going to be, you know, obviously ones to watch. But I'll reiterate that of some of the meets that we're seeing right now, or that we see this week, I think ACC's is a lot of intrigue to at least check in on the scores after each day of the meet and see how this one pans out, because there's a lot of tight races on the team side of things. So let's just get into it right away, Des, with the predictions for this meet. We got 15 teams to go through on each side, so take a deep breath before you start.
Yeah, how we're going to go through this is we're just going to give our top 15, then we'll kind of talk about that top three and kind of debate through that as well. Why don't we start with the men's? You want to go first?
Here we go. NC State coming in with the win. Cal 2, Stanford 3, UNC 4, Florida State 5, VTech 6, University of Virginia 7, Louisville 8, Notre Dame 9, Pitt 10, Georgia Tech 11, SMU 12, Duke 13, Boston College 14, and Miami with a diving only team 15.
My 8 through 15 are the exact same. So I'll just read off my top 7 then. I have Cal winning the meet. I have NC State 2nd, Stanford 3rd, Florida State 4th, Virginia 5th, UNC 6th, and then Virginia Tech 7th. Everything after that is the exact same as Casey's. Give me your reasoning behind that NC State win.
Because Cal's not. Mostly, I just want to just come at you about the Cal take, but I think that NC State has shown, I think, a lot of consistency in being able to perform at the conference meet each year, and I think they have more experience to lead some of this. Some of those younger guys that they have, and, you know, Max Carlson, for example, just more so than Cal, where you have not nearly as much experience with, you know, Keaton and Yamamoto being some of the probably the two biggest names with big competition experience. I just think when you look at this first, you know, conference experience for some of these younger guys on the Cal team, I just don't think you will see the consistency for all those athletes to put up, you know, those performances throughout the week that are going to lead them to the win. I just don't see it. So for me, then it's gotta be NC State then. And I think it actually will more be of a race between Cal and Stanford for second.
Okay. I actually like, that's actually a pretty good take. The issue with me with NC State is I don't know what we're going to get out of Bustos and Hayes. I really don't. They have not been amazing this year. Aiden Hayes coming off of a really, really big injury, and he hasn't looked like himself since then. If we don't get the Aiden Hayes that's going 20 point in the 50 backstroke and, you know, a 138-200 flyer, like, I don't know what we're going to get from this NC State team. And again, like, Cal is Cal, and they haven't really been looking like Cal recently, but I was looking at the results from last year, and they had a bunch of big time drops from their last dual meet into this conference championship meet, and they kind of ran away with it last year. And I think if Durden rested them a bit more for conference last year, and they had more of a runaway win, why would he not rest them this year for kind of a closer meet? And I think we're going to see kind of that Durden magic slide around in LA.
I do think that's not. I think Cal should absolutely go a little bit more all in for ACC's than they have in years past, but I just don't know.
Don't know if they
even
will.
If they do, even if they do go all in,
well, is it enough?
Yeah, is it enough? I still don't. I don't know if they'll have enough consistency of high caliber performances to get it done. So
we might both be sleeping on Stanford. Like,
we might be. No, that's fair. Actually, I mean, they did whip Cal's butt a few weeks ago, and I also did. I basically contradicted myself because I did say that Stanford is usually pretty darn good at conference, and then regresses at NCs. But I gotta stick. No, I just think that Stanford just, to me, doesn't have quite the star power. They have so much talent, but I just don't think they're going to stack up the event wins, relay wins that an NC State will or a Cal will. I don't even know if Cal will win very many relays, but I think NC State's probably a shoo-in for at least a few of those sprint medley relays. And so with that, I think Stanford will kind of miss out on that boat and probably not be able to overcome.
If Cal's going to win the meet, they have to win at least one or two relays, and that relay is going to start out with the 800 free relay they have to win.
Yeah. So I'm excited for this one, but let's keep it moving here so we don't spend all the time here on ACCs. But let's move over to our friends down in the Southeastern Conference.
We didn't talk about women's placements, by the way.
Nah. Oh, we don't. All right, fine. Let's backtrack. Let's do the women's quick.
For the women's, I think we have very similar, if not the exact same. I think we have just a couple things switched around. I have Virginia winning, Stanford second, Louisville third on a hot streak, NC State fourth, Cal fifth, UNC sixth, Duke seventh, Virginia Tech eighth, Pitt ninth, Notre Dame 10th. Florida State 11th, Miami 12th, Georgia Tech 13th, at the SMU 14th, and Boston College 15th.
Wow, that's elite stuff right there, Des. Same as last time. I got 8th through 15th fall the same, or 7th through 15th fall the same for me. I think the big difference we got is I got Cal in third, so I got Virginia with the win, Stanford 2. Cal 3, Louisville 4, NC State 5, UNC 6. And I don't know why you knocked Cal so hard like that. I think they've actually proven to have a really, really strong women's team with Maya West, Claire Weinstein, Tegan O'Dell. I mean, I see event wins when I read those names, which they won't come easy. But I look at, NC State, you know, it's going to be tight. And I like Cal. I think Dave has definitely probably recognized the women's team as maybe a little bit more potential this year. And so I think he's going to have him firing for a podium position.
Here's what I'm going to disagree with you. You mentioned this a couple times. You're like, freshmen that don't have experience, swimmers that don't have experience at the big meet. And Cal is exactly that. They have a lot of really, really good young swimmers that have a lot of great potential, but they haven't swam at conference before. And I really think that Louisville,
at the Olympic.
Louisville has been on just such a hot streak recently that I think they're going to do really well. I think they're going to get more relay wins and higher relay placements. I don't know if anyone's going to get many relay wins over Virginia or Stanford, but I also think that having Stanford and Virginia there is kind of Cal's kryptonite. I think that I don't know if those girls can win any events. Whereas Louisville, like, with their breaststroke pop prowess and maybe sneak in a 50 freestyle in there, like, they could win a couple of events. I don't know if Cal's going to.
Yeah, I probably should even. I think I may have made a previous take on last episode that Gorbenko will go for a 3-win meet here at ACC's, and I take Louisville lower in the rankings. But I love it. It's a good take. And that's what's tough about this is I think, you know, that 3 through 5, 2 through 5. Could pan out basically one way or the other. So like you said, it boils down to the relays and some of those lower placing B finals sneaking into A finals sort of thing. So we're gonna save these, and then when the meet's all done, we'll go back and follow up.
Yeah, we did.
Now I've jumped the gun a little bit, but can we finally do the SEC?
We can preview? Do the SEC.
All right. SECs, they're in Knoxville. Am I wrong about that?
I believe so.
Okay. I think that's right. Knoxville this year, men's and women's combined meet. Now, the SEC meet, they are adopting exactly what the NCAA is doing for the national meets in terms of the meet lineup. So that is going to look a little bit different for folks kind of switching over to this new lineup. That first day we'll see back 200 fly, 100 breast. And actually, I should say, SEC does, they stretch out the meet one day more, so they actually, it is slightly different, but they're a little bit closer to the SEC or the new NCAA.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this, even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at rss.com.
...format than obviously ACC's who stuck with the previous year's format. So Wednesday, 100 back, 200 fly, 100 breast. Thursday, 100 fly, 4 IM, 2 free, 4 med relay. Friday, 200 breast, 50 free, 500 free, 2 free relay. And Saturday, 200 IM, 100 free, 200 back, and 400 freestyle relay. All right. What are you watching right here on the men's sides for the team battle this year, Des?
Men's side, I think, is really just the race for second. Texas is going to run away with this one. Similar to Virginia with ACC's, I don't really think there's a world where Texas doesn't win this meet. So the race for second really becomes Florida, Georgia, and Tennessee. Three teams who going into the year, I think everyone had their eyes on Florida and Tennessee. And Georgia has kind of just really been sneakily doing really, really well this past month and a half. I'd say ever since midseason, they've been just absolutely on fire.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I think there's a ton that had some big names that we knew at the beginning of the year. And I think they've really added to that with whether it's, you know, Elliot Woodburn, breaststroker, who's really been moved to that elite level. They just added names, so, you know, they're Luca, Orlando's of the world. And so I think that's really bolstering their team to actually make a really good conference run. I think when I think of UGA, their composition of previous years, it's almost more of a NCAA style roster composition where they have so much star power to make NCAA finals and then maybe don't have the depth that they basically can just go all in for NCAAs where they can score a ton of points with those A finals and really perform better at that meet rather than an SEC meet where it's just so competitive top to bottom. So I think that's a great take now that they've kind of, you know, built up that depth to really keep an eye on UGA in this meet. Now the question is, though, is there any way for either men's or women's to get by Texas for the win? Come on, Jess, give the people some hope.
I mean, on the women's side, Tennessee maybe will be able to make a run. But like, I just don't really see it happening. The men's side, there's absolutely no way. But again, Tennessee's a team where on the women's side, they've been racing really, really well. They didn't win it last year. Texas won it last year. But they're a team that's been swimming well. And if anyone's going to give them a run, I'd say it'd be Tennessee. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's got to be Tennessee. We got to probably maybe verify that the 2025 winner. I think you're right though. Tennessee has traditionally, what's one of those other teams like a Stanford in the ACC, maybe even more so, who has had just absolute knockout SEC meets, and then
Texas won last year by quite a bit.
Okay, so I don't know if Tennessee's really added enough to maybe make a run at the women's Texas team who has kept a lot of their talent and actually added more. It's going to be tough, but probably the only team that you would think could make a run is Tennessee. If they put one of those meets together where they're just lights out top to bottom, could make it a close meet. So
I do, now looking back at the results, I remember Florida-Tennessee race for second was just absolutely electric, and that's what's going to happen again this year. It's going to be a race for second between those two, and I think it could.
No, it could. And so let's get into a little bit some of the races maybe that are going to help get us there, starting with women's 200 freestyle.
Yeah, 200 freestyle. There are five 142s in the SEC this year. That's all very, very close in time. There's six 142s. Nicoletta Pidar, been 142.1. Kennedy Dobson, been 142.1. Lily Nesty's been 142.3. Camille Spink's been 142.5. Ella Jansen's been 142.6. And Erin Gemmell's been 142.6. So, I mean, just an absolutely wide open event. What are we going to see? What do you think is going to happen with that race there?
Yeah, no, this one's tough because you're looking at, some of the marquee names for even season this event. I think you could see, depending where Camille Spink is right now, really showing up here. I like Kennedy Dobson, who has just been seemingly chopping time every single meet this year. Nicoletta Pidar, I think... it's her first year in the U.S. I think it'll be interesting to see how she kind of holds up in the first conference meet of her career. So it seems really wide open. I'm going to take Kennedy Dobson.
Yeah, I think I'll agree with you there, but really don't sleep on Nicoletta Pidar. She's been 156 zero long course in the 200 freestyle. Yeah. And the 200 freestyle, I think, is going to kind of be her sweet spot. I just think it's going to take her a little bit more time, and that might be someone where we see drop a lot of time at NCAAs. Probably someone who, the more she swims that event and that race, the better she gets each and every time she touches the pool. But I agree. I think Kennedy Dobson is going to come out with the win on this one.
Always. I give such good rationale for my takes that Des just can't. He can't do anything but go with my take.
Yeah.
I always take
it. Moving on to the next race. Familiar name for the 500 free, and honestly the mile as well. It's really going to be Jillian Cox versus Kennedy Dobson. Two just absolute phenomenal swimmers, and they're just going to go at it. Right now they're both seated with 432s. Jillian Cox is seated with a 432.92. Kennedy Dobson seated with a 432.96. And then the next fastest is Julia Brossoit. 435.1. So I really think that race comes down to those two. And the mile again is going to be similar. You have Cox with a 1541 and then Dobson with a 1547.
Yeah, I mean, obviously both of these swimmers are, they're going to basically prime for two big clashes in both the mile and the 500. And in the 500 here, I actually do like Jillian Cox a little bit more. And I'll tell you why, in that with this new format, you now have these ladies doing the mile on day one, on Tuesday, actually, of the meet. Okay, so you're going to have Tuesday mile. Then you're going to have, I believe it's Thursday that the 200 free falls, and then on Friday you'll have the 5 free. And I mean, obviously both these ladies are elite distance swimmers, but I think for Jillian Cox, who's kind of been or done this rodeo before, probably a ridiculous amount of training under the belt coming from a big year at Texas, I think come Friday morning, when, you know, need to get the job done in a 500 free after swimming a ridiculous amount of race yards, I just see her holding up a little bit better and winning that 5 free over Kennedy.
I actually agree with you there. Hard to disagree with Casey and all these takes. No, but Jillian Cox, she's the only
elite swimming.
If you look at both their best times, while Dobson's been on a hot streak recently, her best time is that 4:32. Cox has been a 4:30 and pretty dang close to getting under 4:30. So I think, again, consistency and just overall experience with the event, experience winning at the top, like you mentioned, I think that goes to Cox.
Yeah. I appreciate you just padding up my take. On the men's side, men's 1500 free is we're set up for a titanic clash between none other than Josh Liendo and Guy Kareem. There are some other names that I think you at least have to throw in there to consider. People like Yuri Kribar from LSU, who has been ridiculously fast last year at NC as well as conference. I think you got to throw in. So we got some, Nikolai Blackman, who's been very fast, I think.
Nebrick from Mizzou has been pretty dang good this year.
Very good this year. So really, I think it still does boil down to, Liendo and Karibe. Who do you got? Is it a sweep for one of them, or is it going to be a split of the sprint events?
I think Liendo comes out on top in both. I'm a Liendo truther. I do think that the 100 will be a little bit closer, and really do not sleep on Karibe in that. But I think Liendo comes out on top. He has been known not to rest a lot or shave for SECs, but he always shows up and performs, and these were always the meets that you would see Liendo get into Liendo form before NCAAs, and I think he comes out on top here. He has the fastest time in both events, but again, Karibe's been 40 low, so don't sleep on him. What do you think?
I think I'll mix it up a little bit, and then I'll take Liendo in the 50, and I'll actually take Guy in the 100. I think Liendo doesn't usually miss at finals. Let's just be honest. He's proven it time and time again that he knows how to get his hand on the wall first in finals when it counts. But I just think, you got to save a little bit of both, the mental focus, preparation for NCs. And I think to build a little fire in him too a little bit. You might just really get into a tight race. I think he probably just comes up just a bit shy. But really, this is his final shot to, go after Caleb's 100 fly record in a different event at NCs. I just think his prep is really meant totally and only for March this year. And I think he's probably focused on racing. And I think he'll split with Guy, here at SECs this year.
Here's the other thing that, hasn't been mentioned yet is Tennessee is typically swam faster at SECs. Year in and year out, outside of Crooks last year, every year before that, including relays last year, they were faster at SECs. So with that being said, I see what you mean there. And if Karibe is going to win anything, I think it's going to be the 100.
Yeah, when you got to look at too a little bit that Tennessee during that time was still, I would say, on their build up to being a consistent top 10 or top 5 like team, or who was fighting for wins at NCs. I think with consistency at that level, you build experience of how to approach both conference while keeping NCAAs in mind. I think you look at Florida, who has been consistently at that level for a very, very long time. They have that process down. They know how to mentally prepare their athletes to handle that process, that timeline. I think Tennessee probably has a little bit better handle on that now after kind of being at that spot for the last few years now, to where I'm not as concerned, especially for some of their veteran guys like Guy, to make that happen pretty smoothly. Men's 100 fly, which can't. Liendo is gonna. He's got some tough races on his hand this week.
This event really comes down to Liendo versus Yerlando. Luca versus Josh. Who's going to come out on top here? Luca's been on a hot streak recently this year, like especially this year. He has looked better short course, more consistent short course than I think he did last year. Last year, he had an outstanding NCAA meet, but I think overall, this short course season has been his best that he's had so far. So I think that begs the question, can he take out Josh Liendo, who I don't know if he's ever lost 100 fly in SECs.
No, he can't. So I think we can just move on.
Yep, I agree with that one, actually.
No. Yeah, I think that Luca has already shown, broke the NCAA record in the 200 fly at midseason. You probably don't rest Luca an ounce for SECs. And not that you're going to do a big rest for Josh, but give him some love, a little bit of rest here and there. Let him swim fast at, get the details down. He's famous for his no breath last 25 of his 100 fly, like Caleb Dressel used to do. Let him make sure that he's really consistent on that race plan, kind of the speed of things. I think you just let him rip that 100 fly, and I don't think Luca will be able to match it this week. Come SEC or NCAA, as it could be different, but I think Liendo is borderline untouchable right now.
I agree, especially in this event. And Luca, while his 100 fly has looked great this year, I don't know how much faster he can be than 44.8. The 200 is just his event, right? That is his sweet spot. Even if you look at him long course, he's a very, very good 100 fly long course swimmer, but the 200 is his sweet spot. I don't think he necessarily has that top fly speed that Liendo has to compete with him.
I mean, he's just an elite underwater kicker. I mean, he's been 43.3 in the 100 back, so hey, don't sleep.
That's true.
Maybe he'll pull something off. Maybe he'll pull something off. But last men's event, men's 100 breasts, and almost we're talking about this one almost for the wrong reasons here. Texas sweep watch, question mark?
Yeah, I mean, you look at it, they have four guys who have been under 51 so far. Now, Moglen's probably not going to swim the 100 breaststroke, but Nate German-Perez has been 49.7. Cameron McKeon's been 50.3, outstanding freshman season. And then Will Schultz, 50.9. Really, like, who you're looking at to kind of like step in there and get in between them going 1-2-3 is Elliot Woodburn for Georgia, which you mentioned, who has been very, very good this year, 51.2.
Yeah, he's probably the person that you're going to look to get in there and break that up. But I think it really depends how Georgia plays it this year. Again, are they going to do they think their scoring or their placement potential is better at NCs, or is the podium at SECs more important to them? And I think that really depends. I think Texas, we know that they're kind of moving through this meet. Their depth is just ridiculous. Even if everyone else swim lights out, they're going to win the meet. I think these guys are all probably going to be right about there. So probably takes 50 points to get onto the podium. And so if Elliot Woodburn gets under there, I'd say that probably does it. But yeah, I can't get past a Texas sweep here. I think that's what's going to happen.
Moving on to our predictions here. I'll go first.
Okay. Yeah. Take us to the men's side.
My men's side. My first hot take of the meet, actually, Texas is going to lose. No, I'm kidding. I have Texas winning, but I do have a hot take for a second. I actually have Georgia. Been on a tear recently.
Georgia going all in for SECs.
And they get
this
it
year.
Done. I don't think they're going to go all in for SECs, but I don't think Florida is either, so I think it just comes down to who could win more events. And I think Georgia has filled out all those holes that they had in their roster for relays, and I think they're sitting in a good spot. I have Florida 3rd, Tennessee 4th, Alabama 5th, Auburn 6th, LSU 7th, Kentucky 8th, A&M 9th, Missouri 10th, and South Carolina 11th.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode, and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this, even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at RSS.com.
All right. I like Texas for the win. That's a good take. I got 4-2. UGA 3, Tennessee 4, LSU 5, Auburn 6, Alabama 7, Kentucky 8th, A&M 9, Missouri 10th, and South Carolina 11th. I don't like that you got LSU at 7th. That feels like disrespect. I think that LSU relays are going to be really good. I think Alabama is a strong team, but I just don't think they have quite the A finalists, that they got. Alcantara, they got Tommy Hagar, but that LSU team, I think their relays are going to be really solid, and that's not where you make the difference, obviously, at a conference meet, but I think that really gets the team going, and they could be even in the question for, podium finishes for relays. So Auburn, I don't think they're quite as strong as years past, so I also like them below LSU, but other than that, I think, we're relatively similar there, but what's the rationale for LSU Stones at the 7th spot?
I think they've had a great year. but I also think I remember in past years, Hribar usually doesn't have his best meet at SECs. And I think LSU is going to slip a little bit here.
That's all it is. All right. Fair enough. All right. Now let's go over to the women's side. I'll lead us through here. I've got Texas with the win, Tennessee 2nd, Florida 3rd, UGA 4th, Alabama 5th, LSU 6th, Auburn 7th, South Carolina 8th, A&M 9th, Missouri 10th, Kentucky 11th, Arkansas 12th, and Vandy in the 13th spot. Now, I think that's relatively similar to what you had as well, Des.
It's the exact same, actually. Now, I think that's really where we're looking at it is Tennessee, Florida, and we both kind of agree that Tennessee we think is going to come out on top there. But the rest of that, I think, is pretty much sense.
Yeah, I just think it's – I mean, unless something drastic happens, I think Florida's – I think they're mainly focused on end season. I think Tennessee and I like it. I think they really do enjoy – putting together a really strong team SEC performance, and I think that alone, just that mentality they've had in years past, just tends to lean me towards taking them over Florida in this one for that rounding out the podium. So as always, we'll check in on these in a week when we it's flipped and Vanderbilt wins the SEC title, but let's finish this episode out with the Big Ten, which is the only meet that we've got in the Power Five, this coming week that is women's only. Big Ten's has stuck to their guns and kept the meets separate from each other. We're in none other than balmy Minneapolis, Minnesota this coming week for the Big Ten meet. So might even have to bring out some live coverage of the of the meet on site this week. But what are some of the big storylines for this meet in the Big Ten?
IU versus Michigan is the biggest thing. I think that's going to be absolutely electric. Those two are who you're looking at probably to win the meet. But other than that, like, those two teams have both been on it this year. Does IU have what it takes with their add-ons at midseason to take down Michigan? Does Michigan have what it takes adding Bella Sims at the beginning of the season to take down Indiana? It's going to be an absolute battle for that first place spot.
You got a lot of different names. We're still getting used to USC being in the Big Ten. I think it's really interesting and honestly a little bit hard to predict. And so I think IU Michigan is just it's going to be really close. And come down to some of these races that we got marked right away. 200 free. We got Mina Abraham. We got Bella Sims. We've got Sophie Balducini. Is that her? And then Liberty Clark as well. So
Stephanie.
That's a big time, not only Big Ten, but NCAA race right there. What are you? What swimmer are you looking at in that 2-3?
Mina Abraham's been so consistent all year long. She's the only one that's been under 141. But at the same time, Stephanie Balducini was the one who almost won NCAA's last year. She got out-touched, I believe, for the title. Bella Sims is Bella Sims, who has been swimming a lot better for Michigan than she was for Florida. So keep an eye on her as well. I think I have Mina Abraham coming out on top of this. I don't know how much faster she can be than 140.4, but if she repeats that, I think she'll get the win.
I got Liberty Clark all the way. I think she's living rent-free in all of the Big Ten women's athletes. This year after winning 8 Big Ten Athlete of the Week award honors, I think it's going to be tight. But I think when you got the confidence of that kind of run in your back pocket, it's hard to rule her out for the win. So that's what I'm taking there in the women's 200 free. Let's move over to the 500 free. Who are the hitters we got there?
Yeah, for the 500, we have
Claire Tuggle.
Claire Tuggle and Hannah Ballard. Both have been 435. And then also don't count out Mila Nikanorov from Ohio State as well, who's been 436. I think it's gonna come down to Tuggle and Ballard though. Who do you think is gonna come out on top here?
I don't know. I honestly, in the 5-3, I don't even think some of these. I think some of these names a little bit further down have a chance to come in there and mix things up. I'm looking at you got some names on here like a Mina Abraham or Bella Sims. Who are they going to swim it? Question mark.
She's so good at everything that we don't know what she's going to swim. Right? Yeah, she can do 4 IM, 2 IM. 200 back, 100 back, like you don't know.
Yeah, it's hard. So it's in that sense, I think if they're in the event, I actually like a Bella Sims to mix things up and potentially win there. It's harder to take someone that you to take a winner if you don't actually know if they're going to swim the event. But I take Bella Sims. Otherwise, I'll take Claire Tuggle for the win.
Yeah, I think that's a good take. I hate to agree with you there, but I'm going to agree with you. I think that Claire Tuggle will come out on top if Bella Sims is not in the event. But if Bella Sims is in the event, she's been, 430? Like, no one's going to be touching that, especially for the fact that she's been swimming so great all year.
Lights out. And, I mean, this is really just her final tune-up for her return to NCAAs, and who knows what she's got in the holster.
So. Yeah.
Let's go 200 fly for the last event we got to preview.
Yeah.
We got Hannah Ballard again, Alex Shackle, Miranda Grana, and Justinas Kozan. It's kind of the big four. Hannah Ballard definitely looks like she's a little bit out in front, 150.7 already this year. Alex Shackle, though, I think is a little bit unknown. She is still, I mean, new to IU. I think that she really does have a chance to kind of get in there and shake things up. What else should we be looking for in this event, does?
I really think it just comes down to those two. And if Alex Shackle can be on and swim really well, she's been 150.1 is her best time that she swam.
From 2023 though. Yeah.
In high school. But again, she didn't really have much of a short course emphasis until she got into IU in college this past couple of months, like her emphasis was always long course, which she's been 206, like 200 flies for bread and butter. And if there's going to be anyone that's going to take down Ballard, it's going to be Alex Shackle.
Yeah, no, you're right. I personally see Shackle having a pretty decent prep for the Big Ten meet, and I think just really building confidence that she can perform on the NCAA level. I think we know the talent that she does have. You got to really make sure, like, there's not only the physical side, but the mental side too, that you can kind of be there and compete with some of these other huge names that we have in the sport. And so with that, I do think they, you know, give her a little extra prep, try to, you know, throw her a bone per se, and put her in a spot to you know, drop a big swim and maybe get under 150. Why not?
I mean, this is an event that IU's going to have to win probably if they're going to win the meet. I slept on Hannah Ballard in the 500. I'm not going to sleep on her here. I think she's going to beat Alex Shack.
Yeah, no, that's exactly, like you said, this is one of, I mean, when you look at the overall story of the meet, this is one of those that 3 points or 4 points from, you know, winning to second place, but that's going to add up in this one where the margins are going to be really, really thin. So also keep an eye on IU diving to move the needle a little bit there and lead us to our final predictions of the episode for the Big Ten women's finishing order. Let me lead us off here. I got none other than the Indiana Hoosiers coming out with the win. Michigan 2, USC 3, Ohio State 4, Wisconsin 5, Minnesota 6. Go Gophers. UCLA 7, Northwestern 8, Purdue 9, Nebraska 10, Penn State 11, Iowa 12, Illinois 13, and Rutgers 14. Daz, what do you have?
3 through 14 are the exact same that we had. Again, go Gophers. Hope they have an amazing meet. They've been on fire recently on the women's side. I do have Michigan coming out on top. Only reason why I'm nervous with that take is you did mention diving, which I didn't necessarily put into account. But I think that Michigan has been doing really well. I think they've been on a kick right now. I think Matt Bowe has found his stride as the coach at Michigan, and this ladies team is doing really well. I think they're going to come out flying in that 800 free relay. I think they're going to punch Indiana right in the mouth and win that event, and then just keep flying from there.
Yeah, no, I mean, I like that, and I think diving, and that's not to say that Michigan does have, I think they still will bring a solid group to the table. I'm looking, trying to see kind of some of the scores that we've seen a little bit. And I think Michigan does actually have at least, you know, one elite diver in Kiara Milligan, who's put up some, you know, pretty high scores in 1 and 3 meter this year. But it does look like, nonetheless, that I think IU's got 3 extremely strong divers. And that's really kind of almost been their bread and butter. And it's been for a while, but I mean, especially on the men's side, man, just no one can compete with them in the diving side of things. And that's, it's always nice when you just see points kind of appear. You're watching the swim meet and all of a sudden there's just loads and loads of points being injected into that team score from the dive well. So that could be an underlying story. Can Michigan, you know, overperform in diving and try to kind of negate some of those big differences there? It could be key because it's going to be close in the pool, like we said. Yeah. So
I think it's going to come out of relays, though. If, you know, looking at the relays here, I mean, Michigan's a second and a half faster than IU in the 200 medley relay seed time, the fastest in the 400 medley relay, and I think the 800 free relay could honestly be their best relay with all the power that they have in 200 yeah. freestyle with all those ladies. Yep. And in my opinion, the 800 free relay is the most badass relay out there, right? Like if you go out there and you just slap someone in the face in the 800 free relay, that makes a statement bigger than any other race in the meet, especially at the beginning.
Yeah. No. Yeah. So I'm excited to watch this one. And we'll obviously follow up on these takes in the next one as we prep men's Big Ten and review this week coming up. But I don't know about you, Des. I'm excited to watch this. I'm sure everyone out there is as well. So as always, as tradition, let's round this episode off with a couple DFLs of the week. Want to start us off, Des?
Yeah, my DFL of the week is the Big Ten Conference. Specifically for not
Tell me more.
Specifically for not combining the men's and women's. Looking back on it, you know, it was awesome that it was men's only, women's only. But looking at SEC and ACC doing this, it just gets watching. I was going back and watching some film, you know. But going back and watching some races at SECs, ACCs, it's way louder. There's way more energy. You fill the stands more. You have a whole team there, which is going to bring a lot more energy as well. Like when you have a whole women's and men's team together, that's double the amount of people for cheers, for momentum swings, for everything. And I just think the Big Ten is way behind the ball and not combining. That's my DF.
Let them know, Des. Let them know. That's fair, but I actually kind of like the split conference. I think you get a little bit more. I don't know. I liked it.
I just think, like, especially the Big Ten, when you only have 8 teams on the men's side.
Yeah, no, it's small.
Like, there's
small.
No one yeah. there. You're going to have more spread out events, and yeah.
Yep. I'll go with a little bit of a different take on the DFL. I think that, especially the SEC, ACC's too, the 5-6 day meet format is an absolute deal. I think it's one thing when you're locked in for a 3 day type format where you have Wednesday night relays and then 3 days of meet. When you expand it to a 4th day of prelims final with that those relays still on Tuesday night at this point, it's a long, long week of swimming. And don't get me wrong, I love, tracking these meets, but it really is, I think you almost lose a little bit of the excitement when you're getting things going on a Monday evening and dragging it out to Saturday night. So I like a little bit more compact, a little bit more excitement condensed in there, but that might just be me.
You know, that's a fair take. I will say from a coach's perspective that, resting kids and swimmers for meets, having a longer meet almost makes it a little bit easier because you can kind of use that lengthened out meet as the rest.
Yeah,
totally get where you're coming from.
Yeah, you do, Des. All right, folks. with that, we digress any further. Appreciate people tuning in. As always, let us know if there were some predictions that we absolutely botched, some other swims that we forgot to mention. And we're looking forward to catching everyone in the next one after we've conquered these meets. And yeah, signing off for now. Thanks for tuning in. And we'll catch you in the next one.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this, even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at rss.com.